this episode of Taps. This is Gretel,
Joseph,
and Julie.
And we are here to talk about the Oscars.
It's my favorite season, award season.
or as the official end of the award season, because we know now that there isn't just the Oscars, it's the Golden Globes, the Critics' Choice, the Producers Guild, the SAG Awards,
the Writers
People's
Guild,
Choice.
The People's Choice, and everybody who has made a movie that is up for an award has been spending the last 2 months in very fancy outfits and talking to reporters about all of the things.
Doing their junkets.
Yeah, and it's a really interesting season. I mean, the films this year run the gamut. From very independent films like Three Billboards to The Post, you know, the latest Steven Spielberg and Dunkirk,
The Last Jedi, and yeah.
Or funny films like A Girl's Trip, and shout out to Tiffany Haddish, who
love Tiffany Haddish
did an amazing job announcing the nominees at a god awful hour, right. As everybody likes to say. Oh, I was asleep.
That's right. My publicist called and woke me up. I didn't even think about it last night.
Because it's the publicist's job to stay up till wake up at 4 in the morning.
That's what you pay them for.
Exactly.
Okay, good to know.
You can sleep. Let the assistants, suffer. The talent gets to, sleep
exactly.
in. Not that they do. But they pretend that they were asleep.
Well, as we delve into the nominees, I have to say, I think this is one of the years I've seen most of the movies, thanks to a little thing called MoviePass.
Yay, MoviePass! I'm only on, probably day 40 or something of MoviePass.
And we're not getting paid for this. It's just a new app that you pay $9.99 a month for.
Unlimited movies. Unlimited in the sense that you can only see one a day. It's been a great addition because it literally frees your mind of thinking, I don't want to pay another $10 to $20, depending on where you are, to go see a film, and you can just go and use check in on MoviePass.
For me, it honestly is the gift that I've always wanted. I am an avid moviegoer, and as reality sets in, and reality being costs. It's been very frustrating the past few years as I've, as a New Yorker, I've had to tighten our belts and movie ticket prices go up. You really have to be judicious in picking which film you're going to see. And for years, plenty of stuff, interesting, cool things that I've really wanted to see, I just haven't been able to because I could only pick one.
And right. But also, not only the cost, but also the convenience of in 3 to 4 months, it will be available in the comfort of your home,
right.
To see on streaming. And so that
streaming
window,
or HBO.
Yeah.
It was like a choice. Do I go to the theater? Do I wait to stream it? Or do I just not pay at all and wait for HBO?
And I'm actually a person who does not like streaming.
You like that movie theater experience.
I like the movie theater experience because when I'm home, I can be very easily distracted. And to me, it then just is watching television.
So what's your take on home-like comforts at movie theaters, like reclinable couches?
I am very against it, actually. I do not like home comforts at theaters, except for I like a cup holder. I will say that because I sneak a cup of coffee into every movie that pretty much every place I go
uh-huh.
to, there's a cup of coffee in my hand. But I don't like the recliners for two reasons. Number one, the particular recliners that they mostly have picked, the seat is a little too long, so my feet never really can quite touch the ground enough, and I'm not seated up in a comfortable position for my back. But larger, I don't want an audience population that is submissive. I want them to be engrossed in the movie.
Engaged,
and engaged, and sitting forward. And you can't do that when your feet are up, you're in a Barca lounger, and it also promotes, I think, irresponsible behavior in terms of texting and disruptive behavior.
Yeah, because the more they feel like they're at home, the more they're going to behave like they're at home.
Right.
And I also don't like being served food at a first-run movie. Like, I don't mind going to Alamo Drafthouse and seeing an older film, and you have to buy a certain amount of food or drinks, and it's brought to your table or brought to your seat. But those theaters where they serve you, again, that's another distraction that's just pulling me out of the movie.
Unfortunately, movie theaters, you know, they make their money off the concessions. You know, they don't have to share that with any other
thing. And they don't want to share that with MoviePass.
And I feel them taking my money every time I paid $10 for a couple of handfuls of popcorn.
Yeah. And so I don't like movie theaters that serve hot dogs or nachos or chicken strips.
The pizzas.
Things that smell that are going to annoy me because they smell. I'm there to watch a movie and not have it be background to dinner.
And back to the point, which you have done in exponential numbers since you've had MoviePass. And we are here to discuss which ones we liked or didn't like.
Yes.
We're here to talk about
the Oscars.
And which ones the Academy liked and didn't like. And if we agree with them or not, going into ceremonies, which I believe are March 4th of this year.
Yeah. So this is our little preview. We'll talk about the winners in a subsequent episode. But should we start with Best Picture?
Start with Best Picture.
Sure.
What are the nominees?
So, The Shape of Water, Darkest Hour, Dunkirk, Phantom Thread, Three Billboards Outside
Ebbing, Missouri,
Get Out, The Post, Call Me by Your Name, and Lady Bird.
And the winner is La La Land.
I, too, can't say Call Me by Your Name without thinking of it in, like, this poetic,
I'm
in the Italian countryside, and I am going to call you by my name.
What a group of...
So it's a group, yeah. It's a good group.
Nine, right?
One, two. Yes.
It's not. It, I am of the opinion it should have been 10.
What was left out?
Oh, yeah, if you had a 10th one.
Oh, Wonder Woman.
Yes, which got completely shafted.
Wonder Woman I would put on there. But I've seen 8 of the 9 films. I have not yet seen
Call Me By Your Name.
playing at my old haunt, the Paris Theater, which I will go to. But I think it's a very interesting slate this year. I think that Wonder Woman... definitely should have been acknowledged as a Best Picture.
It was one of the highest grossing films of the year.
But it was, yes. But it also tapped into the zeitgeist of the moment and was a terrific movie. And I think that given sort of where we are as a culture right now with the Time's Up and Me Too and just sort of a renewed sense of social consciousness, something as seemingly frivolous as a superhero movie actually... kind of taps into where we are right now, and I think that I don't think it would deserve being Best Picture, but I think it should have been acknowledged as such. And it was a terrific movie. That's the other thing. I mean, it really was terrific, as we have discussed in previous episodes, such as Wonder Woman and Wondrous Women, episode 1 of Tapped.
I mean, I would disagree with you in the fact that I have since attempted to rewatch it, and I think, as we discussed in the first episode, the first, like, 30-40 minutes are great.
Yeah.
And I couldn't watch the second half.
Understandable.
Which I think, like, Oscar Best Pictures need to have, like, a little bit more of a complete picture. But I do want to honor the fact that it, you know, per our last episode talking about the Grammys and really having pictures that represent a year. And for me, that film... really is Get Out. And so that is, I know we're probably not there yet, but to me that is my pick for Best Picture. And not only tapping into the zeitgeist, but also having a craft. Because I've also rewatched that film. And that film actually gets better in second viewing. Because, one, obviously, you know, some of the twists and turns, but it makes the acting and the directing much more richer.
So Jordan Peele, of the famous duo Key and Peele, comic background, wrote this really interesting, what would you'd think of as a little film, but it's become so much more. It's really smart, some commentary on race relations today, but he wrote and directed it. And this was a historic nomination for him as being one of the...
Yeah, as a writer, producer, and director of a first film. He's only the third or fourth person to have done that.
To get nominations.
To get nominated as writer, director, and producer.
Mm-hmm.
James L. Brooks did it with Terms of Endearment, which was his first film. Orson Welles with Citizen Kane. Warren Beatty with Heaven Can Wait, and I think that's it. I don't think that there's anybody else who've had their first film be in those three categories, as they are the functionality.
Yeah, really impressed with that.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's going to win Best Picture, but I do think it's up there. It should. I think what's probably going to win is...
Well, before we... Should we do that as the lightning?
No, sorry. That's a totally random thing.
Okay.
The Shape of Water.
You think will win?
Or should I do. Win? I think it will win.
Okay.
Because it's got a lot of momentum right now. And, but it's one of those films you either love or you hate.
Team hate right here. which I know is disagreeing to you guys, but I came away from The Shape of Water and felt like it was multiple films in one, and it never committed to one thing.
It's a monster movie.
It's a love story.
It's a mob.
It's a lobster story.
There's also a mob tale, Russian mob storyline. But it's also a throwback, which to me is also based on our last conversation about the Grammys, is people love to reward nostalgia and that feeling of old-timiness and the glory and the beauty and the grittiness of that. Obviously, a hint to Man in the Blue Lagoon and a bunch of other things. It was beautifully shot, I do have to say, and acted.
I think people also love Guillermo del Toro, the director, and much like Christopher Nolan, they've been in this business for a very long time. This was the first year Christopher Nolan ever got a director nomination for the Oscars, and this was for Dunkirk. But we've thoroughly enjoyed his films over the years, including Dark Knight. And so I think people also just love Guillermo. And I know Joseph has a lot of feelings about this film.
I absolutely was mesmerized from minute one to minute done. I thought every aspect of it was superb. From the technical aspects to the music to the story to the performances to the casting and the costuming. I never thought there was a wasted or boring scene in the film. For me, there was no padding in it. Everything made sense, and it was just an absolute gorgeous experience for me, and I loved it. I think it probably was my favorite movie of the year, and I don't think it will win.
So what do you do?
What I think will win,
yes,
is Three Billboards.
Okay, I was just going to say that. That is a film that's surprised me with the momentum.
Yeah.
It really, really surprised me at how well it did at the Golden Globes. I mean, I love me some Frances McDormand and Sam Rockwell, who's like one of those character actors who's been in this business for a very long time.
And he let everybody know that at the Golden Globes.
Yes.
Woody Harrelson.
I mean, but I'm just surprised because I didn't walk out of that saying, ooh, this is one of the best films I've seen this year. I thought it was a very interesting film, but it's also very dark.
Very dark.
And I'm not, but maybe that's what these times are.
But I think what we're seeing with Oscar voters or wins is people aren't afraid of dark and they aren't afraid of having emotive. And I think people are voting much more with their heartstrings than they are with the production dollars as of late. Like the Oscar bait films, which to me are like The Post or Dunkirk, aren't faring well.
Yeah.
Because they may not have as much of an emotional pool. Where like something like Spotlight, which won 2 years ago, did really well because it was well acted and had that emotional depth, even though it was really dark at times.
But we also have an academy with voting members that are more diverse now.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, when we've talked about Oscar So White and the lack of diversity and representation within nominations, I think we are beginning to see fruit in a voting body that has become more diverse thanks to the Academy's effort over the last 2 years.
Who's nominated for Best Director?
So
it is Jordan Peele, Guillermo del Toro, Christopher Nolan, Greta Gerwig, and
Paul Thomas Anderson.
Okay, so you have Mexican, Guillermo del Toro, African-American Jordan Peele, Greta Gerwig, female, Paul Thomas Anderson,
from the Valley,
white kid from the Valley, and who was the other one?
Christopher Nolan.
And Christopher Nolan, Englishman. So, two foreigners, one woman, one African-American, and one white guy. So, who will win Best Director this year?
Well, you just laid it out. In fact, they're like, I mean, I think that's really, I think that's an interesting category because it's proof that, but I also think too, like they can't, I think campaigns have really worked this year.
Yeah.
In identifying much more nuanced films, like A Lady Bird or A Get Out, up against a Guillermo del Toro film. And so I think that's exciting.
But I also find the trend of late in the last few Oscars that Best Picture doesn't correlate with Best Director.
Right.
And I find that really interesting because you don't have a picture without the director. And so while I do think Guillermo has a soft spot, I think Greta or Jordan have a very good chance of winning Best Director because these were very fresh movies. Mm-hmm. They played really well with audiences across the board, all demographics. And so I don't know that could be anyone's game because I don't think this year that the Best Picture is going to be the same as the Best Director.
What do you think, Ruth?
I really don't know. Obviously, I am rooting for Jordan Peele. That would be my vote, which I don't actually vote because I'm not in the Academy.
But if I were.
But in all my Oscar pools, that's my emotional vote for sure. But I think I agree. Like, I think it's going to be a tight race, as is the Best Picture race. And I think that this what's really interesting about this year is there are no clear front runners who were like, oh, of course they're going to win.
Yeah.
Just like we all thought, you know,
The Post was going to win.
The Post was going to or La La Land was going to win last year. I think that makes for a much more interesting ceremony, a much more interesting race where you have, you know, 5 to 10 films that are all competing instead of just like one or two. Right. And so I think that's exciting to me and why I'm really interested in this this year's ceremony.
Well, I think in this case, Guillermo's going to win.
Yeah.
I don't think Jordan's going to win. I don't think Greta's going to win. As much as I love Christopher Nolan, not a chance in hell.
And not for this
and
movie.
Not for this movie. And Paul Thomas Anderson's not, it's not going to happen.
Okay, so Phantom Thread. I'm not sure a lot of people have gone to see it because I don't think it's marketed very well, A. And I think, B, people are only going because this is supposed to be Daniel Day-Lewis's final film. He says he's retiring. Why this would be the film that he chooses to go out on, I don't understand.
Right.
But I just think it's an interesting, it's a beautiful film. And the costumes are gorgeous because it's about a fashion designer. But I did leave that film asking why. why now? Why was this film made? Why is this the swan song?
Right. I think a lot of people are confused by that. I loved the movie because it's slow as molasses. It is talky. It is boring, but all in all good ways for me. And then becomes so weird. No, I'm not going to spoil, but so weird at the end that I was like, oh my God, this is fantastic. I loved it, but wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah. It's not for everybody.
It's not for everyone.
Yeah. I mean, it looks pretty.
70 millimeter.
And it's well acted as reflected by the nominations for Leslie and Daniel. Yeah. Is it nominated for costumes?
I think so.
Because it could win for that.
Yeah. It probably will.
So, what did you think was going to be Best Picture, girl?
Get Out.
My vote is Get Out. I don't know if that will win.
Okay.
But that is why I'm going to watch.
It is nominated for costume.
And
so one interesting thing I have to say, because we just saw Darkest Hour, which is the Winston Churchill just prior to the whole Dunkirk scenario. It's when he was named prime minister. One, let's talk Gary Oldman, because that's one of the most amazing makeup prosthetic.
And I don't know if you've read the piece. I think it was maybe the New York Times where he convinced a makeup artist who's nearly in retirement to come out and he would not agree. Gary Oldman would not agree to do the movie unless, and forgive me what the name of the makeup artist was, unless the makeup artist would come and join the movie with him because he knew that he needed somebody who was artistically talented enough to create prosthetics that allowed him to act, but also allowed him to be Winston Churchill.
Right.
And it worked.
Yeah. And Gary Oldman, you know, I think especially in the last, 10, 15 years, because his highest profile role has been in the Dark Knight films, which as Commissioner Gordon, which is a pretty thankless, dull role. I mean, let's be honest. It's not the flashy role.
Batman!
prior to that, like, his body of work, he is an acting monster. I mean, it's you put him up against Daniel Day-Lewis as, like, you'd be hard-pressed to figure out really which
and,
one.
And he is up against Daniel
And he is up against. But, I mean, dating back to 30-some-odd years ago with Sid and Nancy, where he played Sid Vicious, Dracula, True Romance, where he had the dreads and the one wonky, the thing on his eye, where he's the drug dealer, The Professional, where he's famous for that big, send me everyone. Everyone? Everyone! I mean, like, he's just been, over his entire career, phenomenal. And he's never won an Oscar. And yeah, I hear he can be a, shall we say, irascible character. But honestly, he's just a phenomenal, phenomenal actor.
So is he your pick for best actor? Because he's up against Timothy Chalamet mm-hmm. in Call Me By Your Name. Daniel Day-Lewis, mm-hmm. Phantom Thread, Daniel Kaluuya
from Get Out.
And Denzel Washington for Roman J. Israel Esquire, which
was the Dark Horse nomination for this year.
I'm really
for sure.
surprised at that one, but
I would say of that group, Oldman is both my choice and what I think will happen.
And honestly, after seeing Darkest Hour, it's such an interesting year that there's two films about Dunkirk, an event I'm ashamed to say I wasn't familiar with. And so to have the Dunkirk film, I almost feel like Darkest Hour is a very good companion piece. And then go watch the first season of The Crown on Netflix. And you're going to get like the full right. Winston Churchill experience. And it's actually really quite interesting. Yeah. I think it's interesting for anybody. And there was a third movie.
And there was a third film called Their Finest, which came out earlier this year, an English film. With Bill Nighy, and Gemma Arterton, which is about an English film production making a sort of wartime propaganda film to lift the spirits of England about Dunkirk. And so, like...
What a funny year to funny have year. Three
it's
films.
The year of Dunkirk. And that was a lovely film also that got very little attention, but I highly recommend you check it out because it really was... It was a terrific film.
So, Best Actress. We have Frances McDormand for Three Billboards, Saoirse Ronan for Lady Bird, Sally Hawkins for The Shape of Water, Margot Robbie, I, Tonya, and, of course, Meryl Streep in The Post.
I'll start with Margot Robbie, because we haven't talked about I, Tonya, which was honestly my second favorite film.
Really? Good film. Yeah, the Goodfellas of ice skating.
I went in with not having high hopes, because I think if you lived through that, you're like, I know everything. You watched all of the interviews. You remember Nancy Kerrigan in the hallway.
why?
And to have a lot of preconceived notions because of the artistic choices of the director and the way the script was written provided some much needed context, but also a satirical, but also potentially truthful look at the differing of perspectives from Tonya, her husband, her family, and the world.
Yeah. Terrific movie. And Margot Robbie doing not all of, but much of the skating.
She trained for months.
Trained for months. And like all great English actors, completely lost her English accent. And
She's Australian.
Even, like, even like,
better.
Even better. And if she was from New Zealand, forget it. You know. But yeah, terrific movie.
So I want to jump ahead because this is going to lead to like the actual show of the Oscars, the Best Original Songs.
Yes!
Because we all know that that can either be a hit or a huge miss.
Or a hit in the face like the poor girl from How Far I'll Go from Moana last year. I hit in the face with a flag during the ceremony. But anyways,
So,
what are the songs?
The songs. Let's start with Remember Me in Coco, the Pixar film.
I'm crying already.
I completely boycott Pixar films because I want to retain some sense of dignity in a public
space.
It's
okay to cry for Pixar. That's all I have to say. Everybody knows
that.
Yeah,
I don't just cry at Pixar. I, like, ugly cry.
I ugly cried at Coco. That's all I have to say.
Okay, so we'll get your thoughts on what's going to win. Mighty River from Mudbound. I believe that's Mary J. Blige.
Mary J. Blige is a double nominee this year for both acting in Mudbound and for the song.
That's amazing.
Mary J.
I love me, Mary J. This Is Me from The Greatest Showman. And I laugh because I was not the biggest fan of the Hugh Jackman vehicle, the musical, the movie musical, The Greatest Showman, about P.T. Barnum. But This Is Me is by Pasek and Paul.
Who won last year for a song for La La Land.
The City of Stars.
Literally everywhere.
And I love the La La Land soundtrack. We bought it on vinyl. It's even better every time we listen to it. It's more addictive. But I just could not get into this film.
So it's been a dark horse film, which did really poorly originally at the box office, but has actually now picked up steam thanks to older females and a younger audience. I was riding in the car with a 13-year-old who was listening to the soundtrack and really digging it.
So interesting.
So people, you know, it has definitely picked up steam and it's really surprised the producers of the film in terms of how it's done well, although obviously doing poorly initially, and obviously too going against the reviews, which really were not positive.
I just think it's hard to follow up La La Land with The Greatest Showman.
They're two very different shows, and obviously too Pasek and Paul have wrote Dear Evan Hansen and won a Tony for that, and so I mean, This Is Me is definitely one of those big, cheery, I statement type songs. And so I think that'll be an interesting one to see how it's performed, because it's such a big number, obviously, taking place at a circus.
And it's the woman from the film is going to be performing
at the Oscars. Having that, what type of ensemble circusy number. I'm curious to know how they do it, because musicals tend to go one of two ways. They either do the lead singer at a microphone, on stage, nothing much else, or there have been some very interesting productions. So.
Right. And the actress played the bearded lady in the film. So for the love of all things wonderful, please don't put her in costume from the film. Let us see her beautiful face. Please.
As I said, I don't know how it's going to be staged.
All right.
They're considering actually bringing that to the whole thing to the stage as well on Broadway.
Oh, on Broadway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
See? Tapped. Okay. So number four, Mystery of Love in Call Me By Your Name.
I mean, Stevens, it's a beautiful song and really encapsulates. And if you watch the music video, that song, the whole movie. And I think he was one of the rare ones that, cause he also composed other songs for that film as well. And he also has a song about Tanya Harding, which I highly recommend you listening and watching the video to. It is incredible.
He says he's going to wear a tuxedo to the ceremony for the first time ever. He's never worn a tuxedo in his life. So that'll be interesting to watch on the red carpet. What does he choose?
Yeah.
And then the final nominee is Stand Up for Something from Marshall.
By Ender Day, which I do have to say, I got to see her perform that live in Central Park and then saw her at the New York premiere of Marshall and went up to her afterwards and said how fabulous she was.
It's the same day. Because you pieced out of that concert.
I was there too. You were there too. And I pieced out of that concert. So I went to the Global Citizen. I saw Andra perform. This is, I think, one of the first times she's ever performed this song live, and I knew she was going to kill it, and she killed it. Again, Google it. It's amazing. And then went to go see The Marshall at the Urban World Film Festival, which also featured Sterling K. Brown, Kate Hudson, Chadwick Boseman, and Josh Gad live. They have all had quite a year. That's another podcast.
Absolutely. I just realized that. Yeah.
And so, and then Andra also is in the film, and she performs the song, which got nominated, and she will kill it at the Oscars. I cannot wait for her. And I hope that, to me, that is my vote, and hope that it wins. And it's crazy that I looked her in the eyes and said, great job at Central Park. Given that we just were in two different places at the same time, the same day, the magic of New York City. And she said, thank you. And then walked away and it was beautiful.
Do you think she took the subway like you did to the theater?
I'm sure she didn't run from the middle of Central Park across, to Central Park West, to take the subway to Times Square and run around like I did. I'm sure she had a car waiting for her.
Well, I think you might be her good luck charms.
Yeah.
I am looking forward to the performances. I think that, that's part of the fun of the Oscars is the musical numbers. So as long as they pertain to the songs that are nominated, oftentimes the Oscar broadcast puts on these ridiculous spectacle bits that just elongate the already oppressive 4-hour running length of the show. So as long as they keep it to the songs that are actually nominated, I think it'll be great, and I'm looking forward to seeing them all.
And one last thing, Jimmy Kimmel is back to host, and I have to admit, they did a promo, which was kind of clever, playing off the La La Land. It was a fun little video and a surprise cameo at the end with your favorite.
Mr. Warren Beatty.
Mr. Warren Beatty came back to redeem himself, although technically he didn't read the name.
He didn't read the name. It was Faye Dunaway. But when it's like, if the truth conflicts with the legend, print the legend. The legend is that he read it, and so he's gotten all the press about when Warren Beatty read off the wrong name when he really didn't. But
and no cell phones backstage for the people handing out the envelopes this year.
But
here's the other thing: why don't they put the best picture in a gold envelope? or a different colored envelope than
because
all the other.
All Oscars are worth the same.
No, they're not.
It's the last one. Like you get through your pile. Like this is how it works. There's the same stack on each side, and you get through it.
Well, clearly somebody didn't flip the thing over, and they got freaked out.
That is. Yes, it has been investigated. So anyways, we are at our last segment of our podcast, which is our tapped prediction, or what's on tapped, where each of us will say one thing we predict for the future. Again, Oscar related or not. But I'm going to start and say that I predict that Timothée Chalamet will win an Oscar, not this year, but a year in the future.
Oh.
He has a long career ahead of him. I'll just put it that way.
Like a future year. Not next year.
So who do we predict in the future will win an Oscar?
Or if you want to answer another question, you can do that as well.
Huh.
I predict that Shia LaBeouf will win an Oscar.
Oh.
And will be greeted with a thunderous standing ovation as if, you know, Laurence Olivier came back from the dead to I think that he will have some kind of, you know, redeemable moment, and people will freak out when he wins. That's my prediction.
Well, I don't think mine's too far of a stretch, but I do believe Sterling K. Brown will win an Oscar someday. He's been sweeping the Golden Globes and the Emmys. But he is the Denzel of this generation. So I love you, Sterling.
Oh my gosh. And, will he come back as president? As Aaron Sorkin said that if he were to revive the West Wing, he would want Sterling K. Brown.
Yes. Yes. 1,000 times. Yes.
I think everybody's in agreement, but will that happen? We're out here to, you know, support that. And they both agreed that would be good. So I'm excited for that.
Let's hope.
All right.
That's great. Well, thank you for listening to this episode of Tapped. Be sure to find us on all your social media, and we look forward to talking to you next time.
Bye.